Hi, I'm Kelly Corrigan. You've probably never heard of me. Maybe you did. I wrote some New York Times bestsellers. I gave a TED Talk. But the reason I'm in your ear now is to invite you to listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders. We talk to everyone from Bono to Amy Schumer, Spike Lee to Rainn Wilson, Krista Tippett and Bryan Stevenson about purpose, creativity, well-being, and what makes life worth living. Follow and listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
12:03 Tuesday, make that Thursday, the 2nd of January 2025. Good afternoon. Thanks for being with us here on the WBBM Noon Business Hour. I'm Andy Dane, in for Rob Hart. There is an investment strategy that involves the highest yielding yet underperforming stocks. We'll discuss the dogs of the Dow in our next segment. But first, as the new year begins, more and more of us are embracing dry January to promote healthier habits and a reset after the holidays. Many businesses also taking note by offering more non-alcoholic options. And joining us now on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com. Phil, good afternoon. Happy New Year. Thanks for being with us here on the Noon Business Hour. So dry January really exploding in popularity in recent years. For those who aren't familiar with it, explain it and what it could mean for businesses here.
Well, the good news is that as we ring in the new year, more people are abstaining from alcohol than ever before. There's really three events that take place during the year. Dry January, as you pointed out. What we're seeing now is 3 in 4 Generation Z adults are planning to abstain during dry January. But actually, it started probably about 15 years ago over in England with Sober October. So we've got Sober October, we've got Dry January, and April is actually Alcohol Awareness Month. So we're really seeing a very concerted effort, especially with younger drinkers, to abstain. And as you point out, there's a lot more non-alcohol alternatives than ever before.
So that's a way that we're seeing businesses really cash in here if they realize that their customers, their shoppers, maybe aren't going with the normal beers or wines that they do on a normal month. They're opting for those non-alcoholic beverages. Are we seeing a spike in popularity in that market as well as these dry January and related months also gain the popularity?
Absolutely. There's no question about it. Dry January last year, alcohol decreased their sales about 11%. And that's huge for this industry. When we look at the number of people who participated back in 2023, it was over 57 million people participated in dry January. So, yes, while people are abstaining and they're buying these non-alcoholic alternatives, keep in mind that non-alcohol alternatives, for the most part, are less expensive. So that means sales for all these retailers declines as a result of people switching.
And Phil, from your perspective, we've talked about how really these sober months have been gaining in popularity, as have the non-alcoholic options. Where do you see this going in years to come? Is this something that maybe will continue to evolve and businesses will continue to kind of adapt and help out their clientele? Where do you see this going here?
Yeah, absolutely, because what science has shown us is alcohol consumption is a health risk. And basically what they're saying is any alcohol consumption. So it used to be, oh yeah, you can have a glass of red wine, you know, with dinner and that's good for your heart. Well, that's not true. So what we're really seeing is, especially with younger generations, the move away from alcoholic beverages. And I think, frankly, it's going to continue. It's going to decline, which is why we're seeing all these alcoholic beverage companies invest and do startups for non-alcoholic alternatives.
Really fascinating stuff here to start the new year. Thanks so much. As always, that's Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com. Coming up, a look at the so-called Dogs of the Dow investment strategy.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, the Dogs of the Dow investment strategy, focusing on high dividend stocks, underperformed in 2024, but may be poised to rebound here in 2025. Joining us now to discuss is Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, online at horizoninvestment.com. Chuck, thanks for being with us here on the Noon Business Hour. For those who aren't familiar, take us through the dogs of the Dow investment strategy and how it can prove to be profitable.
Well, hi, Andy. The dogs of the Dow strategy, basically, at the beginning of each year, you're investing in the 10 highest yielding stocks in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. So you're basically ranking all 30 stocks in the Dow, and you're buying in equal amounts the 10 highest yielding stocks in the Dow. The thought behind the process, behind the strategy, is that it is a way to, in effect, invest in a contrarian way in the Dow. Stocks with highest dividends tend to be stocks that are probably a bit out of favor, hence the high dividend yield, and they're stocks that are looking to rebound the following year. The other thing, obviously, this strategy gets you is a higher level of cash flow, which can help the total return of the portfolio. So that's kind of the impetus. It's a bit of a reversion to the mean play, where you're buying stocks that have been out of favor, and you're judging that out of favor by what the yield is on the stock.
So we mentioned, Chuck, that this somewhat strategy underperformed last year. What are some of the risks associated with kind of committing to this? But on the other hand, what are some of the possible big wins here?
Well, the biggest risks are, and you saw it in big time last year, and actually in recent years, is that it is a strategy that is much more on the value end of things than the growth end of things by the stocks you're buying. So in stock markets where value is really underperforming, and especially if value is underperforming because you have an area such as technology that's doing well, it's going to suffer a bit. There are two technology stocks in the dogs of the Dow going into 2025. But neither of them, and those two, by the way, are IBM and Cisco, but neither of them are among those kind of Magnificent Seven type stocks that have really led the market over the last couple of years. So value markets, when they're out of favor, this will be out of favor. On the other hand, if you believe that value is going to be coming back in vogue next year, this year, 2025, and if you believe investors are going to be returning to dividend-paying stocks, this is a strategy that should do better in 2025.
And Chuck, for those kind of weighing there, the positives and the negatives, or I suppose the potential risks that do come with this strategy, and we talked about kind of some of the negatives in 2024, where do you see the dogs of the Dow heading here in 2025? And is this something that people should look into here in the new year?
Well, it's a strategy that could represent a piece of an investor portfolio. You don't want to put all your eggs in this basket because, again, it is more of a kind of an interesting niche strategy. I do believe that if you think that the market is a bit stretched valuation-wise and you're looking for a place where you might see a little less volatility and play a little defense on this market, then I think the dogs of the Dow can probably do okay in 2025, especially given those dividend yields, which I think across those 10 stocks are averaging somewhere around 3-4%. So you're going to get cash flow from the strategy for sure. And again, if you think it might be a little bit more of a challenged market in 2025 versus the great markets we saw in 2023 and 2024, then this would be a strategy worth considering for at least a portion of your portfolio.
Lots to consider there, and great stuff as always. Thanks so much. That is Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, online at horizoninvestment.com. Coming up next, the idea of making investing a family affair.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, starting an investment club with family and friends can be rewarding, but it's crucial to clarify goal structure and investment focus to build wealth and financial education together. We welcome in Bill Ulivieri, owner of Senecal Capital Management, online at senecalcapital.com. Bill, good afternoon. Happy New Year. Thanks for being with us here on the Noon Business Hour. You've heard of teaming up with family and friends to maybe go on vacation, maybe start a fantasy football league. Investing is a big endeavor here. Talk a little bit about an investment club and maybe for those interested, how to get involved here.
Sure. Well, Happy New Year to you, too. An investment club can be a group of people, family, friends, getting together and pooling their money together to invest in particular stocks or bonds or cryptocurrency, but at the same time learning about finance and saving money and how to make our money last longer. And sometimes those organizations and those group of people can be very structured and highly organized, or it can just be a group of people who meet, you know, once a month at your local park district to share your expertise about investing in finance. And then they'll just invest, if they like the idea, they'll just invest in their own IRA or 401k. So really, it's just a great way for people to come together to serve common purpose and interest and have social engagement. It's really a great idea, Andy.
So you talk about some of the obvious positives there, whether that's, you know, learning more about the markets, you know, growing a bond, and obviously, hopefully, making some money along the way. What are some of the risks? I'm sure people are hearing this and thinking, well, you know, I've got an annoying brother. I've got kind of a controlling dad. You know, maybe there's concerns about the group dynamic. What are some of the risks there and ways to maybe kind of get around them?
You know, I think when people come together, again, to serve their common purpose, I think a lot of those risks are actually diminished. Now, mind you, everybody, you know, in any group that you ever get together with, in any volunteer organization, there's always, you know, 80% of the work is done by 20% of the people. And that dynamic still happens in family and in when friends get together. I was in a cryptocurrency investment club where we got together and shared ideas, but honestly, only one or two guys were kicking ideas, and the rest were there just for pizza and a glass of wine. So as long as you're willing to stay open and be mindful and tolerant of some of the people who are just looking to take ideas, and then there are people who love to contribute ideas, and just be open and aware of that. But honestly, these investment clubs at park districts and, you know, the YMCAs and such, that's a great way because you have people who are single, married, retired. There's widow and widowers, and it's just a fabulous way for diverse people of all stratuses to come together and share really interesting ideas and the common knowledge that only every individual person can bring.
And Bill, quickly, before we let you go, aside from, you know, finding the table with the pizza and wine, for those who are thinking about starting or joining a club here in 2025, what is your biggest piece of advice?
I think the biggest piece of advice is you have to make sure that you're highly aware of when you have to contribute your funds if you're going to join a more formalized group and who's going to be responsible for keeping track of the profit and loss statements and filing taxes. Because sometimes it can be really complicated when you do a formalized structure and not everybody can contribute at the same time. So, you know, just make sure you completely understand how the group is organized, structured, and what your responsibilities are when you get involved.
Really interesting stuff. Helpful as well. Thanks so much. That's Bill Ulivieri, owner of Seneca Capital Management, online at senecacapital.com. Still ahead in Technology Thursday, a look at whether the growth of artificial intelligence will be hitting a wall soon.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Andy Dane in for Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. The FBI says the driver responsible for a deadly rampage in New Orleans acted alone. A special report from CBS News next. Cities around the country reassess their public safety plans in the wake of the incident in Louisiana. In Technology Thursday, there are questions whether the explosion of artificial intelligence can continue at its current pace. And the turning of the calendar to 2025 may be the inspiration to look for a new job. On Wall Street, the Dow was down 283 points, NASDAQ dropping 149, and the S&P 500 falling about 40 points. AccuWeather says a mixture of clouds and sunshine for the remainder of the afternoon. Some light snow possible in the southern suburbs, a high 32 degrees. Right now, sunshine 31 degrees in Chicago at 12:31.
CBS News special report. Investigators now believe the New Orleans truck attacker acted alone. FBI Deputy Assistant Director Christopher Rea says agents are still looking at evidence Samshuddin Jabbar left behind.
Three phones linked to Jabbar have been recovered, and digital media exploitation is a priority to see what is on the devices and determine if there are any other potential leads.
The FBI has found no connection between the New Orleans attack and the truck explosion in front of the Trump Hotel in Las Vegas. More from CBS's Omar Villafranca.
They said over 400 tips came in from all over the country, not just here in New Orleans. So they, of course, want to get more information from people, track it down, see if any dots connect. They don't want people connecting the dots online.
CBS's Scott McFarland is in Washington, where President Biden is getting another update on the investigations.
There is, as just behind me, construction of the inaugural platforms for January 20th and concern about the security then.
The president is set to speak at the top of the hour. CBS News Special Report. I'm Michael Wallace.
It's 12:32. The Chicago Police Department says it is monitoring developments following the deadly truck attack in New Orleans and explosion outside the Trump Hotel in Las Vegas. Former CPD Superintendent Gary McCarthy tells CBS News Chicago those incidents could serve as a warning.
I think that departments across the country, every once in a while, need a wake-up call to say, hey, this is still going on. Let's pay attention. And I think that they will be doing that.
CPD says it has increased security measures outside of the Trump Hotel in downtown Chicago.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, the stocks are trading lower at this hour, and joining us now on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Jeff Kilberg, founder and CEO of KKM Financial. Jeff, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us today. 2024, really a banner year for the stock markets. Curious if you see that momentum carrying into 2025.
You know, Andy, Happy New Year first and foremost. And yes, we are going to see stocks momentum carry. However, we are seeing some profit taking today. We did see the three major U.S. indices start off with a bang, up about 1%, and now we have seen a bit of a reversal, but I think this is a healthy reversal. You're seeing Apple down 3%. You're seeing Tesla down about 7% after just a phenomenal run. So we've seen some of these forward gains being pulled forward in the month of November, December, after President-elect Trump was voted into office here in about 18 days. So I think the stock market is going to have volatility, but I'm cautiously optimistic on the year.
So you talk about some of the maybe the concerns early on. Jeff, when you take a step back here and you look at 2025 as a whole, as far as biggest threats to the markets, where do you go?
Well, I'm an old bond guy. I started my career at the Chicago Board of Trade in the pits, Andy. So I'm always going to look for bond market leadership. And I think where a potential threat is Fed policy. I think the Fed has really begun their first misstep. They started cutting rates. They had that bazooka initial 50 basis point rate cut in September, and they've had two additional rate cuts totaling 100 basis points. Well, the 10-year note, Andy, went from 3.6% to today nearly 4.6%. So while they cut 100 basis points, the 10-year, the long end of the curve, went up. What does that mean in layman's terms? That means that borrowing costs for some of these higher beta technology names, interest rate sensitivity, small cap names are going to be a little bit challenged because you see those higher interest rates have a lag effect. So we've seen the stock market have it go straight up, like you said, in 2024. So this repricing, this revaluing really makes a ton of sense to rebalance. The Magnificent Seven, those top 10 stocks essentially in the S&P 500, they're at the largest weighting ever in that index. So we have some concerns short term, but I think once you see that repricing, that's going to allow some of these other names to participate in a move higher in Q2 through the back end of the year.
Jeff, when we on the other side of that coin to threats, when you look at the market, what area do you go to first when you talk about an area that could lead the market here in 2025?
Well, a boring blue chip name has really kind of come front and foremost. And you're seeing a lot of it's Bank of America, Raymond James. They're talking about equal weighting portfolios. And that's where there's vulnerability, Andy. You think about all the ETFs that track passive index like the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ 100. So we actually, I'm the manager of the Essential 40 ETF, ticker ESN. That's a boring basket of 40 names, but they're blue chip names. They're industrial names. They're some of the names that you don't really think of because all we hear about is the Mag 7. But when I think we revert back to a repricing, you're going to find names that really come up to the surface, like a Marathon Petroleum. You're going to see JP Morgan, CME Group here in Chicago. And some of those names that don't get talked enough about, they're going to find some investors allocating money as we see this rebalance, which is coming in Q1 and is here today.
Jeff, lastly, you know, one area of the market that we have also really seen be on fire lately is crypto. Curious your thoughts on the space here heading into a new year.
So it's fascinating to see, you know, cryptocurrency, specifically Bitcoin, is supposed to be the non-correlated asset class. It's supposed to be a safe haven, the new safe haven instead of gold or U.S. Treasuries. But you've really seen a correlation to the NASDAQ 100, the high beta tech stocks, to Bitcoin. So you're seeing Bitcoin really represent the risk on, risk off. And I think if you see Bitcoin have a pullback here, you're going to see equities lock in step. So I'm looking at Bitcoin to be kind of trading a lot and maybe back and fill from that $65,000-$70,000 level back up to $100,000. So I think there's going to be some churning in Bitcoin, which will also allow equities to reprice as well.
All right, great stuff as always, and really helpful here in the new year. Thanks so much. That's Jeff Kilberg, founder and CEO of KKM Financial. Up next in Technology Thursday, the growth of AI could be facing a short-term peak.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday for planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It is Technology Thursday here on the Noon Business Hour, and the growth of artificial intelligence may soon hit a short-term peak due to data limitations, algorithm constraints, and evolving copyright laws. Joining us now to explain is Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, former tech editor for the Today Show. Paul, Happy New Year. Thanks for being with us here on the Noon Business Hour. So we talk about the potential for AI's growth to hit a little peak here, and whether that be data, whether that be copyright. What are some of the things worthy of keeping an eye on that could kind of present a roadblock here to AI?
Yeah, those roadblocks are already being thrown up by some of the biggest companies in the world. The New York Times has sued OpenAI, Microsoft, over their use of copyrighted content. And so basically, when you think of AI, I mean, a lot of people are just sort of beginning to really get their head around it. Essentially, there are crawlers that go out, the AI, just like web browsers, but this is obviously slightly different, but the crawlers go out and investigate all kinds of databases, and these AI crawlers learn from those databases. Well, the New York Times and Microsoft people were pretty upset when the New York Times articles were being basically mined by AI models. So the AI models were going in there and taking copyrighted material and saying, hey, we're learning. And the New York Times said, you can learn all you want, but you can't learn on copyrighted material. So to give you an easy sort of alternate example, if OpenAI has to learn, if you want to write something in the style of Shakespeare, well, Shakespeare obviously is not copyrighted, slightly older than 75 years, right? But when it comes to some of the newer stuff, OpenAI sort of, you know, willy-nilly was going out there and mining lots and lots of data without much thought initially to who owned it. So it was making the AI models very strong, but the people who owned the material were like, hey, wait a second. So that's basically the peak you described. That's where we are.
So you talk about, you know, some of the copyright issues there, Paul, and we've been talking a little bit off air here about really the fact that the data limitations. I mean, there's only so much data out there. What potential problems could data limitations have here?
Well, there's two ends. That's a great question. It's basically just imagine a seesaw. On one end of the seesaw, the really heavy end, is human history, right? So all the recorded history we've got down there. And on the other end is the AI models that are learning as fast as they can and getting as smart as they can. And, you know, you can define smart how you want. But the point is, they're learning. But the seesaw battle is going to be if the model runs up against the wall of information it cannot mine of, you know, of human history, because it's copyrighted or owned or somebody has to pay for it, either OpenAI and the other models are going to have to start paying for this material to make their models smarter, or the smarts are going to be limited. So the IQ of AI, to coin a phrase, is going to be limited until those barriers are dropped or somebody pays for that information.
So, you know, Paul, when you factor all this in, whether it is those constraints, the copyright issues, AI is obviously booming in popularity here as we enter a new year. Where do you see it going here, and what may we be talking about a year from now in terms of AI?
Well, okay, so Jeff Bezos, the great question, I think. Jeff Bezos said, you know, one time said, move fast and break things. That was his sort of philosophy for growing Amazon. And I think that's what's happened with AI. Things have moved fast and things are getting broken. And I think we're sort of just like the market has a reset when all of a sudden, you know, there's been a lot of gains or even a lot of losses. Everybody takes a breather, so to speak, as if it were a human being taking a breather. Well, the same thing's going to happen with AI. I think basically what's going to happen is there are going to be formalized agreements where currently there are none to buy a lot of this material. AI is worth, OpenAI is worth a lot. They can afford it. They can afford to start paying their way, as if you will. And so that's where we are right now. I suspect the next couple of months, we're going to see a deceleration a little bit in that acceleration. But soon after, once those agreements are in place, I think it'll start skyrocketing again.
Oh, really fascinating stuff. Going to be interesting to see what happens here in the year to come in terms of artificial intelligence. Thanks so much. As always, that is Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, former tech editor for the Today Show. Hey, join us at this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday. Still to come today, launching a job search in the new year. It's
discussing the news affecting your money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, it's officially 2025, and if you're looking for a job in the new year, the time to start is now. Joining us to discuss is Michelle Reisdorf, Chicago jobs expert at Robert Half. Michelle, Happy New Year. Thanks for being with us here on the Noon Business Hour. All right, so if a new job is on your list of resolutions here in 2025 and you're ready to kind of start your search, where do you suggest that those people start and where do they go?
Well, there's a couple things you should do right out of the gate, and that is, number one, dig that resume back out and freshen it up. Make sure it's got the most relevant skills, certifications, you know, anything that you've picked up in the last year. Number two, go freshen up all that social media as well. Make sure your LinkedIn is as relevant as your resume, and even start to engage, maybe, you know, be part of a couple of conversations or look for different groups that you can connect with, and then reach out to your network. Start letting people know that the new year is here. Here are the new things you've picked up, but here are the new things that you're looking for, and make sure everybody knows that you're kind of on that job search again.
How often, you know, do those updated resumes, maybe that LinkedIn profile adding to it, how often does that really help you not only in your search, but maybe help, you know, those who are looking for hires find you?
Yeah, as a recruiter, I can tell you, we are always looking for, you know, candidates with the latest, greatest skills, those that have actively gone out and updated or kept all of their information relevant and fresh. There might be new opportunities with new skill sets that we're looking for. And the first place for us to find those skill sets is either on your resume or in some sort of, you know, social media, LinkedIn post. And so we want to make sure that you've got that updated and fresh so that if we're running a search, we can certainly find it.
Michelle, I also want to touch on, you know, the importance of networking and maybe even relying on your own, you know, current network to help in that job search. Where do you land there here in the new year?
Yeah, absolutely. Networks are incredibly important. You know, people used to say all the time, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And that still does remain true. But look at networking in a couple of different ways. You know, you always want to reach out to friends and family members, other employers or industries that you've worked in. But we also strongly recommend reach out to a recruiter like Robert Half, because they're going to have knowledge about not only hiring trends, but a lot of times unadvertised roles or specific industry, hot industry or employment needs. And so a lot of times they can make connections for you that you wouldn't normally find yourself, either through a friend or family member or on your own job search.
And Michelle, lastly, before we let you go here, any specific areas of the market here heading into a new year that maybe are offering more opportunities or maybe more lucrative than others?
Yeah, we recently did some research, and we do show that there are kind of four key markets that are going to see, you know, strength. Legal coming through at about 71% of managers looking to hire. Marketing and creative, 68% of managers looking to hire. Finance and accounting, 65% looking to hire. And technology, of course, always very hot right now, at least 58% of managers looking to hire in the new year.
Well, plenty of good news and helpful stuff for those looking for the new job of the new year. Thanks so much, as always. That's Michelle Reisdorf, Chicago jobs expert at Robert Half. If you missed any part of today's program, you can go to our stream and skip back to the time you want. There is a pause and rewind function, works both online and with the Odyssey app.